Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall, here to share the latest on health and healing, and we begin with a study from Appalachian State University. Something as simple as eating almonds every day can boost your exercise recovery by almost 70%. So for all you weekend warriors who get out, and good for you for putting in your 10,000 steps or more, ideally, every day. Just a simple handful of almonds, not much, on a daily basis, and that's what they found. Now, mind you, there's a lot on almonds that have other healing properties and good oils in them, but this was a randomized controlled trial in Frontiers Nutrition, peer-reviewed journal, that showed that female and male participants who ate 57 grams, that's about 2 ounces of almonds a day, for 1 month, had more of a beneficial element in their blood because of the almonds. That's simple. So better exercise, more energy, better recovery. Take almonds every day. Almonds are easy to find, and the best way, I think, of getting your almonds is almond butter. They simply pulverize the almonds, making it easier to digest. And that would be about 1 tablespoon of almond butter put into your smoothie or into a hot cereal like cut oatmeal, be terrific. Next up, the omega-3 fatty acids can prevent childhood asthma. This is according to Copenhagen University Hospital. Taking certain omega-3 fatty acid supplements during pregnancy can reduce the risk of childhood asthma by almost a third, according to this study that was a part of the Copenhagen Prospective Studies on asthma in childhood, or what was called the COPSAC, and the University of Waterloo also participated. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and they found that women who were prescribed 2.4 grams of the long-chain omega-3 supplements during their third trimester of pregnancy reduced the children's risk of asthma by 31%. And that's good. So just look for the DHA and EPA fatty acids. You can get them from cold water fish. You can also get them from avocados and walnuts and hemp. So there's a lot of ways of getting it, but they're really good for your heart. They help regulate heart rhythms. So if you have AFib, it's good, but it's also good for keeping your arteries healthy as well. Now we find out it's good for children. Prevents asthma. And one third, another study from University of Colorado at Boulder shows that gardening, yes, just simple gardening, can help reduce your cancer risks and boost your mental health. The first ever randomized controlled trial of community gardening found that those who started gardening ate more fiber and got more physical activity and 2 known ways to reduce the risk of cancer and chronic diseases. They also saw their levels of stress and anxiety significantly decrease. The findings were published in The Lancet Planetary Health, and that's important. I'm sure that many of you at some point in your life have grown something, flowers, herbs, vegetables, fruits, or all the above. Well, you know how you felt. One argument from the existentialists is, why spend all that time and energy and cost growing some tomatoes where you can go just down to the store and buy some tomatoes? Yeah, they're right. It will cost more in time and effort than if you just bought them. But then again, have you ever bought tomatoes that taste as good as the ones you grow? Because you can let them grow until they're fully ripe. And the longer they're on the vine, that's true for any fruit. I was just out in my garden here. I have about 47 different types of fruit trees, and I've been nurturing them. I cut them back every year, meaning I cut them down to where they're about 8 foot high, so the energy goes into the fruit, not into the height of the tree. The taller the tree, the smaller and less fruit you're going to get. Most people don't understand that. Also fertilizing them every 3 months and raking out all the debris underneath the tree. That's where a lot of insects and worms and larvae go, goes into the root system, and that can destroy the tree. create a blight. And also I can spray the tree once a year with a copper and sulfur, and it destroys all the blights, doesn't affect the tree. But what better way than to go out and just feel a fruit, a peach, a nectarine, an avocado? And you think, okay, it's really heavy. And that means it has its natural sugars maturing on the vine. It has the best smell, has the best taste. And yet most of the food that we eat is harvested prior to it, certainly with fruit, prior to them being fully ripe. So then they try to stimulate that ripeness with chemicals, spraying them. And it never tastes the same. Tomatoes taste like cardboard. And they don't have that wonderful orbs bursting in your mouth sensation that a one you grow does. So try growing fruits and vegetables. And to help you out, in another month, I'm going to be filming each day a garden that I've built. And I'm showing you how to build your own in your own backyard, on your roof, even in a basement or a separate room if you have the space. So you can do urban gardening and you can do suburban gardening. But there's just a great deal of joy in knowing you're sitting down to a salad. For example, the other day, with 14 different types of sprouts, 6 types of microgreens, and 3 different types of lettuce, all that you grew. Huge salad bowl. In fact, it was so large I made 3 different salad dressings, which I then sprayed and then folded it in. When you spray a salad dressing on a salad, it doesn't get wet. It doesn't get soggy. You don't have a bunch of the juice at the bottom of the bowl. And then you stir it, and that allows the fragrance to go on all the different parts of it. So I had 3 different types. You could do the same. In fact, one day a week, you'd just make all your salad dressings and then just keep them refrigerated. Each day then, if you want something on your brown rice, you just spray it on the brown rice. So it's simple. But the actual act of gardening can de-stress you, allows you to be present and mindful of what you're doing. And that's what this shows. So only 3 studies have applied the gold standards of scientific research, the randomized controlled trial, to gardening. None have looked specifically at community gardening. To fill the gap, they recruited 291 non-gardening adults, average age 41, from the Denver area. More than a third were Hispanic, and more than half came from low-income households. The gardening group received a free community gardening plot, some seeds and seedlings, and an introductory gardening course through the nonprofit Denver Urban Gardening Program and a study partner. By fall, those in the gardening group were eating on average 1.4 grams more fiber per day than the control group, and an increase of about 7%. The authors note that fiber exerts a profound effect on inflammatory and immune responses. It influences everything from how we metabolize food to how healthy our gut microbiome is to how susceptible we are to diabetes and certain cancers. And so that's important. The average doctor might tell you 25 grams of fiber a day is fine. Well, I don't believe that's true. I believe it should be around 40 grams of fiber a day. But the average adult consumes less than 16. So that's why they're more susceptible to pressure diseases like hemorrhoids and also the itises, ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, diverticulitis. The more healthy plant-based fiber that you have, the healthier digestion, elimination, absorption, and utilization. From Joslin Diabetes Center, researchers shed light on how exercise preserves physical fitness during aging. Proven to protect against a wide array of diseases, exercise may be the most powerful anti-aging intervention known to science. However, while physical activity can improve health during aging, its beneficial effects inevitably decline. The cellular mechanisms underlying the relationship among exercise, fitness, and aging are not always fully understood. In a paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, researchers at Joslin Diabetic Center investigated the role of one cellular mechanism in improving physical fitness by exercise training and identified one anti-aging intervention that delayed the decline that occurs with aging in the model organism. Together, the scientific's findings were published in a peer-reviewed journal, and it shows that you want to promote muscle function, and you can do that, but you've got to do some resistance exercises, lift some weights. Yesterday, I did a 10-hour and 20-minute conference nonstop, but in between, when we were playing the guests, I would sit beside my desk here, and I would do weights, 20 pounds in each hand, curling them 40 times. That was affecting my whole body. And then just doing deep knee bends and quarter squats, half squats, full squats. So you shouldn't be sitting for long periods of time, but you can therefore sit and do something productive, but at the same time, exercise your body. And that is important because that impacts your overall health. So they determined in this study that a single exercise session induces a cycle of fatigue and physical fitness recovery that is paralleled by a cycle of mitochondrial network rebuilding. And in lay language, just keep exercising every day. Power walking, biking, stationary biking in high gear, meaning lots of resistance, all of this impacts your mitochondrial morphology and metabolism. That allows you to live a longer life. And finally, from Brigham and Women's Hospital, nighttime electric devices are not good. They lower your the melatonin levels. This was in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. This was research done at Brigham Women's Hospital. And what it shows is simple, that when you have a laptop, a cell phone, one of the digital watches or clocks within your room, all of those electronic devices emit light that is short wavelength enriched light, which has a higher concentration of blue light with a peak around 450 nms than natural light. And that is not good because your body perceives this and it can interrupt your circadian rhythms. So in this randomized study, they had people who had no light versus those that had these background lights. They took blood samples during portions of the study. They analyzed the melatonin levels. Sleep latency, time, and efficiency were assessed. And what they found was that when you have any kind of electronic device, you can have as much as a 55.1% suppression of melatonin. Now, you need melatonin. It's a critical part of your immune system. And that's what you get really secreted a lot when you're in deep rapid eye movement. And that's why, want a couple of hints? Well, why don't you take 5 milligrams of melatonin about an hour before you go to bed? But also, don't drink or eat anything within 3 hours going to bed. And then, one of the things to take is magnesium. That helps your body relax. Theanine helps calm you down. And then writing out on a simple sheet of paper all of the priorities in your life, the things that concern you, the things you want to get done, and you write them down in order of importance. And you put that beside your bed and you read it outside out loud. Tomorrow I'm going to work on this. I'm going to unclutter the garage there. I'm going to pay my bills. Whatever's important to you, you write down a piece of paper. The mind then feels relaxed because you're not stressing yourself over what you will do because you've just said what you're going to do. And saying it, writing it down, affirms it. And therefore, you're no longer that stressed. You can hit the pillow and boom, you're asleep. All right? So just something to, you know, pay attention to. I'll give you one last statement. This is from Penn State University. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It says iron deficiency anemia is associated with hearing loss. Now, you can have a wide variety of vegetables, spinach, kale, collard greens, watercress. They're all good. Prunes, lots of things are good in iron. But the iron you get from meat is very destructive to the heart. So don't get the iron from meat or animal proteins. Get it from vegetables. And or just make sure you're getting the iron in a multiple vitamin every day. You don't need a lot, so you don't suffer from iron deficiency anemia. Therefore, you don't exacerbate hearing because it has all forms of mechanisms in the body that impacts it. That's the latest on health and healing. And remember, every Monday, 6 a.m., you're going to get your free newsletter, the Gary Noll newsletter, where I summarize the best health information of the week. All of it cited, all of it's in peer-reviewed literature, and then try what you believe is important for you. Now, if you want the newsletter that comes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, small charge on that, but that gives you a whole lot more information on a lot of different topics, including recipes, investigative reports, commentaries, etc. In either case, we just want to keep you informed. All right? And go to GaryNoll.com because there's lots of articles, lots of film clips, lots of calls to action that you wouldn't otherwise know about. We're going to take a break and be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Now for a commentary. This is called Critical Woke Theory for Dummies. As we enter the new year, Americans have passed far beyond the threshold when the public needs to put ideological beliefs and partisan politics aside and honestly simply reevaluate how our culture has become a toxic stew of maladaptive groupthink. How is it that identity politics, critical race theory, and the bizarre fusion of wokeism's ideology with pulp culture has gone beyond mere indifferent toleration and become infused into our institutions and legal system? For the rest of the non-Western world, which now refuses to idealize the United States, we look as if we're a faux democracy, as a paragon of an enlightened civilization, which we are not. Our nation has morphed into, instead, a self-inflicted insane asylum that would qualify the Marquis de Sade as its chief psychiatrist. Our liberal, or so-called liberal, or certainly nothing to do with the kind of liberalism that I grew up with, this new faux liberalism tied to the Democratic Party and the big corporate interest in the deep state, no, and the intelligentsia associated with it, this whole process of self-flagellation covers nothing that is essential to our real needs and everything to pretend through illusion that we're living a better and happier and longer and healthier and safer life, none of which is true. And as a result, they all cower to the absurd demands of wokeism's aggressive, degenerate thinking. And it is degenerate thinking. As one example, as one of their leaders said just about 4 years ago, you can't change a baby's diaper unless you get the permission of the baby. Really? You can't hug a person unless you get their permission, even if it's your wife or husband. You can't walk down the street and hold hands unless you first ask, may I hold your hand? Because otherwise it's some form of terrible physical aggression against the other person. This is insane. Of course it is. But this is how they think. And they have the power to create laws that allow this to continue. The collateral damage has been the demolition of whatever remains of a former national moral structure that once upheld universal humanitarian and spiritual values. Anti-racists are the exemplars of a new modernist racism. Yes. What happened to the last 100 years of progress that we have made in dealing with real racist issues and getting laws that prevent that from occurring? You wouldn't know any of this had happened. Ideological avarice either inflicts or intimidates those who are perhaps the most connected with reality to remain silent for fear of being labeled heretics and canceled. Those who are most wise, and we have many wise people in this country, and who are most humane and truly progressive, are condemned as fools and attacked. The most progressive of those in our health field, those using the least harmful medications, medical procedures, those who use the least interventions within the body that is not necessary, and use more holistic and natural ways of helping a body, including preventing a disease in the first place, and even in understanding the role of stress and allowing a person to understand how mindful meditation and yoga and acupuncture all can help reduce stress and therefore reduce the body's burden of always having cortisol elevated, which exacerbates a lot more free radicals and damages our cells and can contribute to cancer and diabetes and heart disease. And yet those people, historically, as long as I've been in practice, have been condemned as pseudoscience, as quacks, and demeaned by the mainstream media, who use people who have no experience, no reputation, no study or scholarship, and no results. Yet they, on the one hand, who've done nothing to further the lifespan and the health and healing of Americans, condemn those who've actually lengthened our lifespan, kept people out of hospitals and out of morgues. So those who've been right are now looked upon as heretics. They shouldn't be practicing medicine. They should have no rights at all, according to those in the woke generation. Of course, social media has now revolutionized the public commons for dialogue and debate. Social media has also reinvented how people relate to and interact with each other. Now we observe this is having irreversible consequences. Rather than creating new forms and venues for diverse groups to resolve differences amicably, to discover common ground, no. Social media platforms have further shredded the prospects for a future cohesive society that respects humanity's enormous diversity and differences in political persuasions, social and religious beliefs, and worldviews. Shouldn't we all have a place at the table? No, not according to woke. If you do not align exactly with us, if you do not speak our language, if you do not voice our concerns and our beliefs, then you are the other. You have no value. If you're part of the new skeptic community, part of the World Economic Forum, you're not human. You're just some parts. You're like a machine. And transhumanism will fix that. And you have no authority over your own thoughts. We'll take care of that as well with a new chip. Wow. So I'm not a spiritual being living in a physical body? No. You're just a physical body, and when you die, it's over. But we'll fix that, and we'll control that in the process. And so this whole new liberal commons has enabled the simple-minded and emotionally fragile voices to rise to influence regardless of any merit or achievements people may have earned during their lifetime. So the meritocracy of your life and your character, well-lived, honest, moral, ethical, considerate, empathetic, always there to help your friends, your family, and your community, and your country. No, that counts for nothing. Actually, that counts against you. You believe in the family? Stupid you. You believe in ethics? Really bad you. You believe in morals and civil discussion? Well, then you're just a fool. By whose definition? Those who've contributed nothing except angst, pain, anger, hubris? Yes. What a world we live in. And yet that's the new liberal position. Nothing to do with true liberalism. Virtual liberalism, or as one Indian critic calls the Western memeplex, has contributed greatly to the proliferation of wokeism, its creed. Curiously, wokeism is undoubtedly the product of Western civilization's social consciousness. It is unimaginable that a militant cancel culture could spontaneously arise for more traditional civilizations such as China or Latin America, Africa, or Russia. One argument is that wokeism can only arise in a society that places a high premium on hyper-individualism at the expense of social cooperation and tranquility. If we agree that wokeism is a distorted, fetid, and perverted, mentally disturbed mutation of Western culture, then there is certainly something centrally unhealthy in the Anglo-American collective self-awareness. Wokeism praises victimhood. The more you've been victimized, the better you are. We can use that. We can use you. And there's legions of people who've made hundreds of millions of dollars, whole groups, off promoting victimhood. Whether authentic or counterfeit, therefore the woke demand that we perfunctorily enjoy everything that they tell us we should focus upon, despite anything that may be violent in behavior towards ourselves or others. Forensic experts repeatedly confirm that dehumanization and decentralization and desensitization gives rise to cruel and hysterical behavior. The very idea that everyone deserves compassion and sympathy is counterintuitive to wokeism. No, if you don't believe in us, you don't exist. Haven't we heard during the pandemic that if you didn't get vaccinated, you're the enemy? You want your grandmother to get sick and die? That you shouldn't be allowed to go and buy food? You shouldn't be allowed to go to the hospital? Too bad for you. If you didn't get vaccinated, then if you get sick, die. I have seen what I consider reprehensible behavior by those in the media and those in government, because someone decided for whatever reason, including legitimate reasons, that they couldn't take the vaccine, that they were attacked. But what about all the people who did take the vaccine willingly, without any questions asked, didn't even ask for a package insert, which didn't come with it in any case, or proper informed consent, which was never given to anyone? And look at the actual studies, open and honest and transparent. Are these safe and effective? Which none of the people getting vaccinated cared about. They only believed that the government and those celebrities and those within the woke society says, look at me, I got mine, you should get yours, to be a part of us, our groupthink. And people did. Now those very same people, millions of those people, have been injured, and hundreds of thousands died. And there is no voice for them on any platform. They are the voiceless. And if they should make it upon a radio station or a television program, they are condemned as being anti-vax. But you say, I had all my vaccines. I did what you said. And now I'm sick and getting sicker. You want me to take another vaccine, no matter how sick I am? Yes, take your vaccine. And this is the world we live in. And it's backed by hatred. What does this do? It marginalizes us. What about all the white people? What about the heterosexuals and men? You've been condemned just for being what you were born with. How honest is that? Consequently, the woke fragility contrived victimhood is nothing more than attention-seeking narcissism at its most deprived basis. A serious question arises that even most critics of wokeism refuse to ask. Are those who are the most woke living in a prison of an imbalanced and deluded mind that is not only a danger to themselves, but also to others? This is not an especially comfortable line of inquiry because of the consequences if reason brings us to an affirmative conclusion. However, consider for a moment how mental disorders such as anxiety and depression and compulsive behaviors and irrational fears have become normalized. In fact, if you say you're happy, what's wrong with you? I'm happy. Why? Well, I woke up this morning and I feel good about myself. I feel good about the future. I feel good about all the good people doing good things and all the constructive new ideas coming up to solve many of our problems. Yes, I see a lot of people working together that historically wouldn't have worked together. I see people being more open to other cultures and other identities and saying, what can I learn from this experience? Yeah, I'm happy. My doors are open to a sense of respecting life, no matter what their background. I see. Then you certainly have a mental disorder, and we should take you to the closest psychiatrist and get you immediately diagnosed and give you some medication for that, that you'll take the rest of your life until you no longer are optimistic. Look at us. Do we look healthy and happy? We're filled with anxiety. Every one of us has ADD and ADHD. All of us fear that something will be said that will offend us to such a degree that we will feel our life is threatened. In our own homes, look at Prince Harry. His brother got in an argument with him, and I'm sure that you can find no other example in history of one brother arguing with another, or sister with a sister, or raising your voice, or pushing one another. That never happens. And why? Because when it happened to Prince Harry, he immediately called his therapist, and he says so. Isn't that the way it's supposed to be? He is forever a victim. He will never open his mouth at any time for the rest of his life or his wife's life that they can't show you that they've been victimized by something or someone or circumstances, but never is it them. That's normal. So your anxiety is normal. Your hatred is normal. Your fear of other cultures and other people is normal. So we accept that. We do not accept happy. In wokeism, we do not accept optimistic. We do not accept morality. We do not accept ethics. We do not accept good character. We do not accept decency. We do not accept manners. We do not accept history. We do not accept the family. We do not accept that there is only two genders. No, we don't accept any of that. So get on our side or go to hell, and we'll see that you get there, because we control the media. We control academia. We control the courts. We control the legislature, because everyone is just terrified of us, because all it takes is for us to go after them and watch them crumble. I see. So in the woke universe, your universe, being depressed or having one's personal feelings hurt are viable reasons to affirm one's self-righteousness and give license to be unforgiving, vicious in the extreme, callous with disregard of the consequences to the world or other people. Every word that you craft in that delusional psychotic brain becomes a weapon, a dagger to stab into someone who is not in alignment, someone who has not surrendered their rights for critical thinking and being aware of the spiritual value of all life. Wokeism's weaponizing of everything, especially resentment. Therefore, it is too preposterous to suppose that wokeism is unwillingly constructing a nationwide mental asylum, as its most ambitious and fervent followers undeservingly land coveted professorships, privileged government employment, and higher administration jobs. After all, the more dysfunctional you are, the more you fit into the new equity marketplace. In positions of authority, that's for you. Do you have any experience? Absolutely not. Don't even say that, because now you've offended me by suggesting I should be a professional. No, if I show up to play soccer, I want to win. And I will. If I go to college, don't look at whether or not I'm capable of entering this college. Just take a look at my background, and you'll see you must allow me in, and you must pass me with an A. If I never attend class, I'm just as good as anyone else, and you can't criticize me, because the entire nation will come down on you like a ton of bricks. I don't care if it's Harvard or State University. We are entitled. We do not have to show anything of substance. Give us the job, the top job. We want the jobs that are best in paying and recognition, and we want our picture in the paper all the time, even if we have nothing relevant to say. You see, wokeism is steadily trickling down through the brainwashing of mandatory employee hiring, critical race workshops and seminars, and the sexualization of children in grammar schools. And the vast majority of people, the vast majority, look at this with repulsion, but fear of becoming critical, as they could become a victim. How long will this intemperance last? It is fair to say that those who relish their wokeness entertain a weird personal romance with adverse and unhealthy psychological conditions. The walls of Plato's bleak cave are replaced with self-entitlement, gender dysphoria, mobile phones, pornography, Facebook, TikTok, and other social media with its cancel culture mobs. The woke mob bars itself from courageously discovering a healthy relationship with the natural world. Its fascist elements fuel a system of intolerance. The relative nature of wokeism's sentiments is believed to be absolutely true. On social media, everyone's language must be policed. A person's righteous pride is rewarded by likes and emojis, dependent upon how successful the opposition is castrated, vilified, reviled, demeaned to a subhuman level. Wow. And not unlike the frenzy of the Super Bowl match or World Cup finale, this bottom-up wave of the feeble-minded surges and proliferates to a point where any potential universal values, which have been championed by the world's greatest civil rights activists and peacemakers, has been eradicated in a unified self-loathing towards a shared humanity. Righteous indignation turns into depravity, violence, and tyranny. And those are signs of a larger degeneracy of the psyche. The woke mob's tyranny, as we have observed, welcomes social media censorship, pandemic lockdowns, vaccination mandates, firing of professors, and supports the government usurping greater control in order to police people's thoughts and beliefs. Wokeism's tyranny even demands the destruction of the nuclear family and traditional parent-child relationships. Aberrant behavior, such as pedophilia, that can traumatize a minor for life, is being rebranded as minor attracted persons to gloss over its negative social stigma, and our intellectual class rapidly falls into lockstep cooperation with this tyranny. As Plato warned in his criticisms against Athenia and the philosophical intelligentsia, they are, quote, swamped by the flood of popular praise and blame and carried away with the stream till he finds himself agreeing with popular ideas of what is admirable and disrespectful and disgraceful, behaving like the crowd and becoming one of them. And this snowflake insanity is sweeping the nation's opinion makers, who are then obliged to surrender to the bullying demands of the woke mob, which then create the narrative for education, journalism, mainstream media, and entertainment and popular culture. But ask yourself, how could that be true for the mainstream media? They're highly educated, the best schools, they have unlimited resources at their disposal. When have they gotten it right when it comes to the war in Ukraine? They haven't. The history of that and what caused it. When have they exposed corruption within any administration, especially the current one or the last two? They haven't. They overlook the crimes of those who are relegated to being the powerful elite. I see. So what do they get right? Well, that's a good question. Why don't you try to find the answer? Eric Kaufman at the University of London has called the emergence of woke culture asymmetrical multiculturalism, the topsy-turvy social order promulgated by wokeism, argues for ethnicity as wonderful for minors and poisonous for majorities. Quote, this contradiction in the woke worldview of the left modernist bohemians established a minority and anti-majority mold, argues Kaufman, which occupies the very soul of today's woke culture. Kaufman doesn't ignore the dire need for greater appreciation and empathy for the plight of minority groups in a white dominant culture. What is worrisome is that reflex and hypersensitive reactions now rule over reason. He equates fundamental innovators like Ibram X and Kendi and Robin DiAngelo, or keyboard socialist justice warriors, as the woke's left Jerry Falwells. And unfortunately, one of the leaders of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, convicted for plotting the assassination of President Nasser, and as the father of the ideological underpinnings of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Minus the presence of charismatic, magnetic personalities promising personal liberation from the neoliberal suppression that pervades the U.S., the new woke culture shares many characteristics common with religious cults. The authoritarian figure in traditional cults has been replaced by a collective groupthink fueled by a strange, perverted reward system that reinforces an individual's worst mental and emotional afflictions and vulnerabilities. For example, in her best-selling book, White Fragility, Robin DiAngelo, the author, instructs her sleepwalking followers that it's impossible to overcome their inherent and complicit racism, despite there being no empirical and quantifiable evidence anywhere that racism is biological or that racism is fundamentally inherent at birth. For DiAngelo and her followers, racism is absolute. If you're white, you are racist, and there is unconditionally no cure other than accept this delusional charade and then try your hardest to suppress hidden, invisible racist traits by default. In this Kafkaesque world, there are two types of racists: racists who accept that they are racist and racists who deny their racism. And at various levels, this includes everybody without exception, but especially white dominant in a white society. And similar to every fundamentalist cult, woke critical race theory exploits people's compulsive weaknesses in an attempt to self-define itself and its constructive role in society. This includes making sense of the contradictions in people's lives and their relationships with others. Despite the faulty logic in modern critical theory, any analysis and understanding about race and sociobiological diversity, it is rapidly gaining and gaining more and more followers, especially among younger generations who struggle with an existential angst compounded by our culture, where all meaning has been reduced to materialistic and biological impulses. In our overtly science-driven society, morals and deeper ethical values, which otherwise nurture new harmonious relationships between people of diverse races and ethnicities and nationalities, it has no fundamental basis. There is nothing ethically imprinted in our brains, our biology, or genetic inheritance. Nor are there any emotional responses that determine whether we will act in one way or another at any given moment. The very idea that racism is in some mysterious way intrinsic to the circumstances each of us are born into is not only ludicrous, but outrageously dangerous. It is anti-science, anti-psychology, and certainly anti-spiritual throughout. Another cult-like component of the emerging woke culture is that it promises a future idealistic utopia. However, this future society would be inevitably populated by extraordinarily dysfunctional people. The rule of order upon which such a society would be based would equally be cruel and authoritarian. All cults have some type of utopian vision used to indoctrinate its followers as a mission and goal to strive for. This provides purpose and meaning in a society where anxiety and depression has become the norm and accepted. Thus, we find the most vocal persons in woke culture undeterred by the tiny minority of actual percentages of the population they represent, admonishing a radical activism that is intent on condemning anyone who opposes its dogma. For example, in early 2022, a large Gallup survey reported that transgender and persons self-identifying as non-binary only make up a tiny minority of 0.7% of the entire population. Nevertheless, the attention the mainstream media and governmental institutions grant them would have us believe that a critical percentage of the American population deserves more attention than other minority groups. This utopian ideal reduces an individual's uniqueness and gifts to a level playing field where nobody can prosper by pursuing excellence. The surest way to work up a crusade in favor of some good cause, wrote Aldous Huxley, is to promise people they will have a chance of maltreating someone. Repeatedly, we read about professors, celebrities, and prominent people being unduly ridiculed and canceled by any means available in order to destroy careers and remove them from the public life. No doubt Western civilization has evolved with many prejudices. Many of the biases that cause division have been institutionalized, have been consolidated into the unwarranted power and need to be surgically excised. Nietzsche declared, "Whoever fights monsters should see to it that in the process he does not become a monster." Yet today, we witness the woke mentality being adopted into social mandates and even laws at some of the highest levels of government. For Huxley, such despicable behavior is righteous indignation. Now we are experiencing this pseudo-righteous revenge being collectively carried out across the U.S. by the new liberal left. The Democratic Party's woke caucus, spearheaded by the Squad, utters disdain for people's fundamental constitutional rights. This has been on full display through the recent revelations of widespread censorship and propaganda of misinformation and lies on Twitter. Wokeism has also gone viral in its demonization of those who refuse to be vaccinated with experimental COVID-19 drugs, who question gender indoctrination in schools, or whether men can become biological women and vice versa. Cancel culture has entered foreign policy. The rise in national Russophobia is another manifestation of the woke mind and is nearing the threshold of hatred that the Nazis directed towards Jews, gypsies, and other minorities. Contrary to critical theories' very name, to critically understand the social consequences of power structures, its followers demand that there be superficial public mass consumption of wokeism's incongruous contradictions and irrational claims. We are expected to leave self-examination aside, critical thinking aside, as in Kafka's trial. You have no willing choice. You are guilty if you do not say that you're guilty. And if you are not guilty, you must say that you're guilty. Wokeism creates social gulags with no viable escape, no portal. You can see the real world and say, "I've made a mistake. Wow, how this has changed who I am to who I do not want to be." All this aside from becoming a public outcast to preserve your self-dignity. The more people read the writings of D'Angelo and others, the more indoctrinated into the woke culture they become, rather than advocating for a genuine class struggle based upon economic unfairness and class divisions in the distribution of wealth benefiting the elite and lowering the living standards of everyone else, the woke mob would prefer a new caste system founded upon social group identity. This has even been carried over into the black community, where tensions have risen between those who identify as racially black from the politically black. And all of this cutting, splicing, partitioning, and labeling is playing nicely into the forthcoming social credit scoring that will divide the socially acceptable from the unacceptable. And you guess who will be considered socially acceptable and have all advantages, and those who will be relegated to a new form of social apartheid. Right now in the state of California, a law has been passed and signed by the Governor Newsom that if you're a physician, no matter what your background, no matter what your experience, if you challenge any part of the COVID protocols or vaccination, you can lose your license to practice medicine. The woke culture is fully behind this. Any deviance against wokeism's dogma and its self-gratifying rules of behavior is judged evil, vile, and a threat to a new social society founded upon totalitarian principles to assure a highly controlled social order. Such a structure was being strategically erected on Twitter by the deep state and its demands for censorship by fascist Democrats such as Adam Schiff before Elon Musk took control to bust apart the platform's woke agenda. We are also witnessing woke psychology breaking up families over pandemic policies, whether or not a person is vaccinated, and whether you swallowed a red or blue pill. This is a very common symptom of religious cult dynamics that encourages followers to disassociate themselves from and renounce family members and friends and colleagues and associates who don't embrace their newly adopted social gospel. Today, the most vicious domestic war is being waged between wokeism's dehumanized world and a higher moral society that values inclusiveness and tolerance, acceptance and peace. And finally, it should be stated that critical theory, which has been the groundwork for wokeism's intelligentsia, pretends to be objective and to follow a scientific methodology. If we accept this claim, then critical race theory is thoroughly junk science. Junk science did not begin with the pandemic, nor will it end when the rogues who orchestrated this monster come to justice. Instead, junk science has been permeating throughout all disciplines, even disciplines that are not properly scientific, such as critical race theory, gender studies, and history, and even psychology. Wokeism is just one more cancer that has manifested from the scourge of metaphysical realism that masquerades as being objectively rational and methodically observational. But with all the Orwellian doublethink bombarding us through the halls of Washington, mainstream media networks, and educational classrooms, this is a complete sham, a product of outrageous delusional fights between what is real and what is not. And unfortunately, those whose flights of imagination to confirm entrenched biases and prejudices are winning. So, in conclusion, so as we begin the new year, and if you identify as a member of the nation's overwhelming majority of persons deeply worried about America, its spiritual, ethical, and moral bankruptcy, just say no and walk away. But do so with the courage to speak truth to childish ignorance and the despotic demands of deranged personalities, and especially those in positions of power and authority who have every intention to exploit wokeism's energy, enthusiasm, and religious-like zeal. And also feel compassion towards the woke because once they serve their purpose, they too will be ostracized, marginalized, and tossed to the side after the deep state decides wokeism's naivety is no longer useful to its tyrannical goals. They have all been played, and that's unfortunate. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. For those of you who would like to comment on my comments, please do so. Our forum is open, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you because I get feedback from a lot of people in this audience, and it's indeed a very large audience. I never talk about the figures, but I'd like to believe that we are very humanistic and spiritual in our nature, understanding, but we don't like being played for fools or victims. We don't like to sit back and watch tyranny or anything that condemns the human condition by the needs of people who have some other agenda, like the woke people, the World Economic Forum, those in power. I'd like to hear from you. Give us a call. Rodney is in studio right now. Hi, Rodney.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Good. What would you like to share?
Well, good afternoon to you. Good afternoon to the PRN listeners. And I just wanted to come on and thank all of our PRN listeners for helping us improve our numbers over this past year. And just to give you guys some insight on who are our top performers and top programs that you should be listening to here on PRN. First off, we have Whistleblower Newsroom, Dr. Peter Bergen's Hour, Lead Stories, Expat Files, and Black Agenda Radio. But most of all, I want to thank all you listeners, and especially the 5,100,000 listeners of the Gary Nall Show. You guys have helped increase our numbers dramatically over the past year, and I want to say thank you to you for making us the number one progressive radio station in the world, progressive radio host in the world as well.
Thank you, Rodney. You are certainly you and the other staff members contribute to all this and your new direction. We're building a brand new studio. We're expanding the existing studio. We're having interactive hosts now. So a lot's going on. I'm a little hoarse now because I did a 10 hour and 20 minute webinar yesterday. And I want to thank up till 7 hours, we had 90% of the people still listening. 90% of the people staying on board. Very, very compact material. We started with an overview, and then we went into the different types of protocols. I did not give my own protocol, but we gave the protocols from at least 7 other experts in the field who have clinical practices, mainstream board-certified physicians. 3 of them have 3 different board certifications each, and 3 of them are 3 of the most cited scientists in the world, meaning there's no one better than these people, and that's who we had on the show. But in my summary, I said this, Rodney. I don't see any calls coming in. If calls come in, please interrupt me, and we'll put them on. But I said that I'm optimistic about the future because of how pessimistic the average professional and person is becoming today. The worse it gets, the more likely it will be that people stop for a moment and say, why is this happening? Who's responsible? And what can we do to change it? And if they can do it in their own life on a personal level, then why can't they do it by holding others that are associated with them, like politicians, accountable, journalists who they read about in the New York Times, accountable, and watch on television like Rachel Maddow, hold them accountable for being wrong, when being wrong can mean that people will make the wrong decision and be injured and died, especially on COVID, where they were absolutely certain, not just certain, but self-righteous in their certainty. In my entire career, the very people I said who I had on yesterday, I would be debating them. I would be showing that their view is limited or even destructive. I spent 5 years, along with 4 other scientists, writing a report that became the most definitive report to date ever written on what doesn't work in medicine. It's called Death by Medicine. And in there, we show that their specializations, cardiology and neurology and gastroenterology, were mistreating patients, causing the number one cause of death, not to be heart attacks or stroke, or number two, cancer, or then three, diabetes, but medicine, iatrogenesis. So the very people who supported what I consider tyrannical, closed-minded, limited medicine, with the exception of emergency medicine, is exemplary, and I support it. But now they themselves, having sat at the top table and been the most outspoken voices for orthodox medicine, are now being condemned by their peers. And now they see, for the first time, as one of them said, Dr. Pierre Corey said, all of us, meaning he and all the people who are really top of their field, consultants to the governmental agencies, the World Health Organizations, published in peer-reviewed journals, professors of medicine, they have been thrown out and canceled. They're even canceling their medical licenses and their board certifications. Now they know what it's like. Now they can see beyond what he said, the tiny bubble we all in professional fields, in medicine in particular, in science, we lived completely distanced from the reality of life and openness and challenge. He now is supporting many of the alternative therapies. In fact, they're getting much of their support for their alternative ways of helping people with vaccine injury using alternative therapies. So now there's a coalition for the first time in my professional career of 57 years. There's a coming together of the best of orthodoxy and the best of complementary medicine, all of which is supported on PubMed. All of the evidence has always been there. And yet those who are the cynics, those who are the quackbusters, those who are the skeptics, those who follow Wikipedia, those who say, get your vaccine, I don't care what anyone says, never question Fauci. These individuals now are being shown for the extremely biased, closed-minded imp that they are. And so now there's a new coalition, and you're getting hundreds of thousands of scientists and physicians of orthodoxy now beginning to question for the first time their own comrades, questioning Fauci. So a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of doctors, the alternative doctors, are now working together with him and saving lives. Who do you think brought you vitamin C therapy, alternative medicine? What were the first two studies in COVID to show you could stop the virus in its tracks, save the patient? Two studies done at Wuhan Hospital using 24,000 milligrams of vitamin C. That was not orthodox medicine. That was alternative medicine. And what about traditional Chinese medicine, astragalus and all the other things they've done with mushrooms to help the immune system be antiviral, antibacterial? Now the orthodox are using, where do you think they got vitamin C and quercetin and zinc? Do you think they made that up? No. That came from alternative. That's why I'm optimistic, because now we have voices inside and outside the establishment. And I'm very optimistic that in the next 2 years, with investigations, hopefully, and bringing a shift in these other people who are reprehensible and only represent the deep state and special interest, bring all of these dancing clowns, all of them, Fauci, everyone involved in COVID, bring him under oath, and then let the truth come out, and then let history change. So I'm optimistic, and I'm thankful. And I want to thank the 5.1 million people who knew. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for doing a great job, and all the other good people who work every day at Progressive Radio Network, finding the truth and bringing it. Have a nice day, everyone.